plate a potential nugget.
And maybe now's a good time to talk about your research methodology, right? And what really appealed to me was the notion of self-awareness unicorns. You talk about having spoken to hundreds and thousands of people and really whittling it down to a handful of people who you thought were unicorns and self-awareness. So I'm curious, just linking it back to what you just said about external and internal self-awareness, I'd be curious to understand a little bit more about who these unicorns are and what about them sets them apart from the pack.
Yeah, this is a really fun one. This was probably my favorite part of our whole research program. So we didn't set out to identify these people, and I'll define what a unicorn is in a second. What I originally thought was, all I have to do, you know, we developed and validated this very lengthy, comprehensive assessment of self-awareness. I thought all I have to do is go find a bunch of people who score high as rated by themselves and someone who knows them well, and then I'll crack the code of self-awareness. But what I discovered when we started to do that and we started to interview highly self-aware people is a lot of them, and I wouldn't venture a guess, but I'd say probably most, at least in our experience, had sort of always been like that. You know, you think about those people that are just naturally self-aware. It's just a way they're wired. And when we tried to figure out what they do to stay self-aware, they would literally say things like, you know, I've never really thought about that before. I don't know if I do anything consciously. And we were so frustrated. We were thinking, oh my gosh, how are we going to figure this out? And then it dawned on us that all we had to do was to replicate what I had seen with my coaching clients, right? Find people who didn't start out as self-aware, but who were able, you know, over the course of months and years of commitment and effort to learn to see themselves clearly. And so that's what we ended up doing. We searched the world. Basically, we used snowball sampling, which is you ask everyone you know to fill out the survey, and then they ask everyone they know. And it actually, we got all around the world and in a very, very globally diverse sample. But what we found eventually were 50 people, 50, who not only were highly self-aware as rated by them and someone who knew them well, but they and the person who knew them well also basically established that they had improved their self-awareness. So there were checks and balances built into the system just because, you know, you sort of think about if I went up to 100 people and I said, hey, are you self-aware? Would you like to be a part of our study? I'm sure we'll talk about this later in the podcast, but most people are not very good judges of their self-awareness. So that was why, you know, we had to have all these checks and balances and it was very complicated. But once we found these 50 people, a couple of observations, there were no demographic patterns by gender, age, nationality, job type, industry. We had students, we had a Fortune 50 executive, we had stay-at-home parents, we had professionals, really just a broad swath of people. And what was so interesting to me about that is it showed us that almost anyone can improve their self-awareness if they learn some of the tips and tricks that the unicorns uncovered for us. And so it was just a really fun process. And by the way, the reason we called them unicorns is my research assistants were joking that like, oh, you want us to find self-aware people who didn't start out that way? Well, we might as well be looking for unicorns. So everybody thought that was so funny. And then, you know, when we did find them, we thought, you know, this is kind of the perfect term for these people. You know, it's hard to imagine that they exist, but when we found them, there was just so much we learned.
Got it. And maybe just double-clicking on that, Tasha, could you talk to us about what set them apart? What is it that they did, both on the internal self-awareness and external self-awareness, which was different from the rest?
Oh gosh, we could be here for several days, but let me give you a couple of examples. So the first thing that we saw in common across all of our unicorns was it was actually a mindset. And it wasn't always a mindset that they had, you know, up until the point they decided to become more self-aware, but it was something that I named being braver but wiser. And so basically what that means is, you know, you think about life and its stresses and complexities and just the, you know, the weight sometimes that can put on all of us. it's very easy to go through your life with rose-colored glasses and to say, I'm fabulous. You know, unless anyone tells me I'm doing anything especially egregious, I'm doing really well at everything and I'm awesome. And it's not to say that we shouldn't have self-confidence, because that's actually a really important piece of the puzzle. But what all of our unicorns did at some point was, you know, whether it was precipitated by some kind of event in their life, you know, maybe they were thrown into a new role at work, or some of them were fired for reasons they didn't understand, or they had, you know, something really unexpected happen in their personal life. They made the decision that it was worth the time and energy, and sometimes the pains of self-discovery for them to go on that journey. And what I love about that for the rest of us is it shows us that anyone can make that decision. And it's definitely hard to make that decision every day. And I'm a pragmatist. I always say that if we can decide to be braver but wiser more than half the time, we're probably in really good shape. And by the way, our unicorns aren't perfect, magical human beings. They're flawed and imperfect, just like all of us are. So that was the first thing. The other thing I'd say is, and I'm sure we can talk about this more, but they had really well-defined daily practices to improve their self-awareness. So that doesn't mean that they spend ridiculous amounts of time developing their self-awareness. We actually found that in some ways they spend less time with more benefit if they use the right approach. But things like regularly soliciting feedback from people who want them to be successful and will tell them the truth. Things like reflecting at the end of every day, asking, we call them daily check-ins, what went well today? What didn't go so well today? And then how can I be smarter tomorrow? But I think, you know, just as a sort of final point of the broad brush of what made them different was they didn't get into a cycle where they were navel gazing just to navel gaze. It was very strategic and smart and purpose driven. And I think that's important for us to remember, because sometimes people see self-awareness as just this, you know, almost too daunting to even think about process, right? Where it's like, I've got to go into deep psychological excavation mode for several years. It really isn't like that. And that was what was so freeing to me about what the unicorns taught us, is it's really about those daily practices that foster incremental insight over time.
It's interesting to hear Tasha speak about how we can weave meditation into our daily life. I was speaking with Rich Fernandez, CEO of Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute, an initiative that was incubated in Google to help the high performers cope with the pressures of being in a rocket ship.
Well, what I would say is ritualize it and routinize it. So make it a ritual or a routine. So personally, for me, it's the first thing I do when I wake up. I literally get up from bed, splash some water on my face, and I go downstairs to my office, and then I sit in the morning. And this is early morning before the sun is up. I'm an early riser. And before my family is awake, before I check my email or open up, you know, the laptop or look on my phone or anything, it's the first thing I do. And then the second thing I do is I brush my teeth. So it's to that level of routinization, right? It's to that level of ritualization for me. It's just the hygiene factor, I call it. So to the extent you could make the formal practice of meditation a hygiene factor, it will help make it a habit in your life. The other suggestion I have is something we offer in our curriculum, which is make it a set of integrated practices. When people think about meditation, they think about having to do exactly what I just said, which is set aside, you know, X block of time and, you know, sit in a certain way and close your eyes and protect this space for formal practice. But there's also a way to practice mindfulness and meditation in an integrated way. So for example, as you move through the course of your day, integrate it into your day. Between meetings, you know, if you need to walk to the restroom, make that a walking meditation. I'm actually serious about that, right? Become aware of your body as it moves through space between your office and the restroom. Become aware of your footfall. Become aware of, you know, the felt sense of your body. How are you feeling actually in that moment? Or take the opportunity to focus on breath, or this being in India, this podcast, you know, if you have a mantra that you're, you know, that you're familiar with or particularly like, use that. And I say mantra, and there's often a religious component to that. But here, what I'm referring to is really finding an object of your attention to train your attention upon it, whether it be mantra or breath or walking or sensation. You can really do this throughout the course of your day. I was driving to work today and I was focusing on my breath, not so much so that I wasn't able to drive, but when there was a red light, when I was stopped in traffic, in and out for three breaths, I noticed my breath. Next stoplight, same thing. Integrated practice is also a helpful one.
Back to what Tasha says, I think there are several opportunities for us to be mindful during the day without necessarily getting into deep psychological excavation mode. If this topic is of interest, do tune into my conversation with Rich Fernandez. And this specific segment would be in Nugget 41.04. Thank you for listening. For more podcast content, please visit playtopotential.com. The website also has content organized by specific themes in the curated playlist section. And to know more about the leadership and transition advisory work I do, please visit the About section at playtopotential.com.